Pittsburgh Radio News.
I feel loyal to the neighborhood, and I feel very loyal to my employees. Some have been here over 40 years.
We visit a celebrated sandwich shop in West Adams, in danger of closing after 50 years in the neighborhood. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, March 20th, 2012. I'm Emily Frost. The Los Angeles Board of Fire Commissioners met today to address recent problems in the fire department's dispatch system and response time. Jake O'Brien has this report.
The Los Angeles Fire Department has been under heavy criticism due to technical difficulties with their dispatch system that has left some people waiting for as long as 45 minutes for an emergency response. One victim waited those painful 45 minutes for paramedics to arrive after cutting off her finger. The response took so long that her doctor said too much time had elapsed to reattach her finger. While some people are blaming the delayed response time on the fire department's new dispatch center, Fire Chief Brian Cummings says that no system is perfect.
There's no system in the world that we can build ever that will always that will achieve that 100% accuracy. There's always a circumstance where you can have a failure, no matter how many redundancies we've built in.
The technical failures are adding to questions about the department's performance after the Los Angeles Times disclosed that for years, fire officials were reporting emergency response times that were faster than they actually were.
Our average response time, our first resource on scene to an EMS call, is 4 minutes and 55 seconds.
But this response time does not include the time it takes to process the emergency call, which is said to take between 30 and 90 seconds. Assistant Chief Dan McCarthy assures the public that all problems with the dispatch center have been identified.
We believe we've determined what most of the issues were that were causing us to not deliver voice messages to the stations. And in the last few days, we've had 6,000 dispatches and I think only one we had an issue with.
While the LAFD continues to work out the problems with its dispatch system, people with emergencies can only hope future calls to the fire department are responded to in a timely fashion. Jake O'Brien, Annenberg Radio News.
The Cal State University Board of Trustees is wrapping up a two-day meeting in Long Beach. Yesterday, the board announced plans to freeze enrollment. As Kira Brakey reports, the Cal State system is facing serious budget problems.
Hannah Newmark has been enrolled at Santa Barbara Community College for 2 years. She has had her heart set on transferring to Cal State Long Beach for its nursing program.
I wanted to be a nurse for around 2 years now. My mom is a nurse practitioner, and it just seemed like a really good fit for me to be around people and be in the medical field.
But Hannah's plans may be put on hold as the Cal State system will freeze all enrollment for the spring of 2013 and potentially waitlist all applicants the following fall. The state has cut funding to the Cal State system by $750 million in the last 18 months. They face the possibility of another $200 million if another proposed tax initiative fails on the November ballot.
I'm having to consider out-of-state schools now because of everything that's been going on. It's so frustrating. I have pulled all of my hair out over this.
Cal State LA is one of 8 colleges that will accept a few hundred transfer students from community colleges. The rest will not accept any other students. CSU Media Relations Manager Eric Follis says he expects public outcry over the drastic action of freezing enrollment.
Any of the issues we have with enrollment at the moment are all directly tied to the pull out of state support. And if we think about it, in the last 18 months, the CSU has lost nearly $1 billion.
While this change will be devastating for thousands of students, the news wasn't unexpected for Miles Nevin. He's a graduate student at Cal State Long Beach and a member of the California State Student Association.
This is one that we've seen coming, and we're not surprised because we know that the CSU system has very few tools left in its toolkit to manage what is really a disaster that we're experiencing in California.
The CSSA has been doing everything to get people engaged in lobbying and advocacy to put pressure on the state to stop funding cuts. Nevin says he is uncertain how long these freezes will continue.
This is all dependent on what the state budget looks like. We just don't know. We have to wait and see what happens with that.
For Hannah and many other students, not many options are left. But CSU Media Relations Manager Eric Follis says impacted students should continue taking as many classes as they can at community colleges. For now, the majority of CSUs will stop enrollment for the spring of 2013 with uncertainty for the future. All is dependent on the outcome of the proposed tax initiative on the November ballot. Kira Brecky, Annenberg Radio News.
A 7.4 magnitude earthquake hit Mexico around noon Central Time today, causing at least 60 homes to collapse near its epicenter. The initial quake struck near the border of the southern Mexican states of Oaxaca and Guerrero, near the city of Ometepec, about 200 miles south of Mexico City. Logan Healy reports.
Reports say the quake shook central and southern parts of the country and collapsed a pedestrian bridge and swayed buildings in the capital. Windows broke and plaster fell from ceilings in the center of Mexico City. A magnitude 5.1 aftershock was also felt in the capital. Just after noon central time today, Mexican President Felipe Calderon used Twitter to announce there have not been reports of damage in Mexico City, only scenes of panic and evacuations of buildings. Mexico City Mayor Marcelo Ebrard also tweeted that the city's strategic services, including the water system, are functional, though there have been reports of power outages and telephone service interruption throughout the affected areas. Guerrero Governor Angel Aguirre Rivero tweeted that his state has been seriously affected by the quake, but there have been no reported injuries. Flights from LAX to Acapulco, a resort city 120 miles west of the center of the quake, had not been delayed as of earlier this afternoon. Logan Healy, Annenberg Radio News.
And now for the weather. The first day of spring has brought a taste of sun in the wake of stormy weather. We'll have a low of 50 tonight. Tomorrow, expect a high of 72 and lows in the 50s. And Thursday, a high of 67. Later on Annenberg Radio News, the story of a grossly mishandled murder case and the man whose mission was finding the truth. Johnny's Pastrami has stood on the same corner in Los Angeles for over half a century. It survived two riots, and it's never once changed ownership. But to the people of West Adams, Johnny's is much more than just a place to eat. Nick Edmonds reports.
What if I told you that a man took what started as an accident and turned it into the pride of an entire community?
Unfortunately, I didn't have much of an education. I got married very young and had kids very young, and we decided this is something I could do. And so we opened a place with the help of my father-in-law, because I was only 27 years old, didn't have any money.
That's Al Lewis, now 81. And he's been the owner of Johnny's Pastrami for over half a century.
We're famous for our pastrami dip sandwich. Ours is made a little bit different than most typical pastrami sandwiches, and we're very famous for that.
But it's not just the food that's kept the customers coming back. Just ask Sonny, who's been a Johnny's regular for quite some time.
For about 37 years.
Sonny's seen his favorite food joint go through plenty of ups and downs. And he understands how Lewis has been able to stick around for so long.
He made a statement to me when business was going down some. He said he wasn't making no money, but he had 12 other people he had to look out for, and he wasn't going to close it down. He was going to keep his business open.
Business hasn't always been great for Lewis, but he has always put the people before himself. He is known for employing members of the community that he cares about so much.
I feel loyal to the neighborhood, and I feel very loyal to my employees. Some have been here over 40 years.
But now, after 56 years, Johnny's is once again in danger of shutting down.
It's going to happen one way or another in a short time, I'm afraid.
Despite Johnny's success, rising property rates have kept Lewis from ever being able to buy the land. Lewis hopes to leave Johnny's as a legacy to the community that's helped him rise to fame.
You know, I'd like to see my employees take over without me, if that's possible. If they can't do it, I just may have to close someday unless some outsider wants to take it over.
Losing Johnny's would be heartbreaking for people like Sonny.
It would hurt a lot because then I would find somewhere to go.
Lewis is proud to have built something that so many people have enjoyed for so long.
Some of the equipment is still original. I mean, how many businesses last 55 years? Think about that. And yeah, I'd hate to see it close up. But, you know, I'm running out of time.
The clock continues to tick for Al Lewis, but he plans to do everything in his power to keep his beloved Johnny standing. Nick Edmonds, Annenberg Radio News.
Every Monday night, Shofu the Beatdown and a circle of crumpers meet at Chuko's Justice Center, where they practice the homegrown dance form. Jessica Koslow reports on the mission of Chuko's and the passion of the dancers.
Kruti Parekh's words may shock you.
Los Angeles locks up more young people than anywhere else in the world.
Parekh should know. She is a coordinator at Chuko's Justice Center, named after a community leader who was gunned down in 2005. It is located on the border of South Central and Inglewood. The center was created as a safe space for young people to play and social justice workers to organize. Parekh explains that before raising money to have a permanent location, space was one of Chuko's main concerns.
We had made a commitment that we would have the center open to other folks and organizations that were interested in doing, just good work, helping young people, helping the community.
Since October 2010, Shofu the Beatdown and a circle of crumpers have benefited from Chuko's mission. Shofu is part of Extreme Movement, a well-known crew. Crump is a street dance characterized by chest pops and foot stomps that originated in South Central in 2002. The Crump Circle takes place every Monday from 5 to 9 p.m. Shofu appreciates the reliability and safety of the space. Sometimes the center provides free food and drinks. Mostly, though, young people can practice and perform a street dance they love. Shofu has been crumping for 6 years. He will always remember the exact date he started.
Somewhere in June, I think it was June 20th. I remember the day because I want to remember that day for as long as I live. And I saw the crump video. It was like a piece of me that I felt I didn't have or didn't even know I was missing.
Meanwhile, Parekh is keeping her eyes on the bigger picture, redirecting dollars marked for suppressing crime to positive opportunities for young people like Shofu.
If we took just 1% of suppression dollars for LA County, that would be $100 million. And that could actually provide 50 youth centers around the county, open from 3 to midnight, 365 days a year, plus 500 community intervention workers that can maintain safety within communities, plus 25,000 summer jobs for young people.
With that kind of financial help, Chuko's imagines a world with more crumpers and less criminals. Jessica Koslow, Annenberg Radio News.
A human rights group has filed a petition to the United Nations asking it to help improve living conditions for California prisoners in solitary confinement. Jackie Grant reports.
Dolores Canales' son has been living in a closet-sized cell for over 10 years. She wants to change his living conditions.
What would you do if it was your son? What would you do if it was your husband or your brother?
Canales and other mothers held a news conference today outside the state building in downtown L.A. on behalf of the 4,000 prisoners living in solitary confinement in California. The group is petitioning the United Nations to abolish the use of solitary confinement for prisoners based merely on gang membership. Prisoners who are associated with gangs are placed in a security housing unit known as SHU. They cannot leave until they have been free of gang activity for 6 years. Peter Shea, president of the Center for Human Rights and Constitutional Law, feels the living conditions in SHU are deplorable.
These men are detained in small concrete cells the size of a closet. They have no fresh air. They do not see sunlight. They do not have the opportunity to work or engage in recreation. They have almost no contact with other human beings.
Last July, prisoners in solitary confinement went on a hunger strike to protest the inhumane conditions. After 3 weeks, the strike was called off when the California Department of Corrections Rehabilitation, or CDCR, agreed to conduct case-by-case reviews for SHU prisoners. Jeffrey Collison from CDCR denies the allegations of inhumane living conditions in SHU and says new policies are in the works.
Well, the proposed policy was just released at the beginning of this month, earlier this month, and there's a formal process that you need to go through, and at this point, the proposed policy is being circulated among external stakeholders.
But prisoner rights groups say these don't go far enough. Canales feels these conditions break the human soul.
They're knowingly confining you in conditions that they're hoping that your brain turns to mush, that you feel yourself slipping, that the line of insanity is so thin, and will you break to the other side? Or are you grasping to hold on?
The prisoners hope the United Nations will intervene by holding on-site investigations, permitting Red Cross visits, and ultimately ruling that California's policy on isolated segregation violates the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Jackie Grant, Annenberg Radio News.
30 years ago, an elderly white widow was found brutally murdered in her home in Greenwood, South Carolina. Edward Lee Elmore, a black mentally challenged handyman who worked in her home, was convicted for the murder. Investigative journalist Ray Bonner spent more than 12 years researching and writing Elmore's story for his book, Anatomy of Injustice. Its publication coincides with Elmore finally walking free. I spoke with Bonner about how race, police mishandling, and prosecutorial abuse meant an innocent man spent more than half his life in jail.
The police were in a hurry, as police are. I mean, police want to solve crimes. And here you had the community, you had little old ladies, very nervous, very worried. So the police could say within 36 hours, we've found the perpetrator. But they hadn't. And the prosecution, yeah, that's the problem. Prosecutors want to win. And that's not their ethical obligation. Their ethical obligation is to do justice. Now, sometimes, many times, even most times, a conviction equals justice, but not all the time.
You said that often innocence isn't enough. What did you mean by that?
Look at Elmore's innocent. And there are other cases. I mean, the Supreme Court once said in a death penalty case, evidence of innocence is not enough. That's not enough to get you a new trial. Just because you come forward on appeal, after you've been tried and convicted, no matter how shaky the conviction, innocence is not enough to get you a new trial. And look at the case of Edward Lee Elmore. Look at the number of times courts turned down his request for a new trial. And even when they gave him a new trial, it wasn't because of the evidence of innocence. It was because his defense lawyers had behaved so appallingly.
And he's had to admit guilt in order to get out of jail. How does that work?
You have a right to find it very perplexing and disturbing. He had to enter a plea. I was in court in Greenwood on March 2nd. His lawyer, Diana Holt, stood up and said, Mr. Elmore was not there. He didn't commit the murder. He wasn't in the house. He wasn't there. But he's going to plead guilty in order to get out of prison. He had been, as the judge noted, in prison for 11,000 days. 30 years. He was 23 when he went in. He's now 53 years old. The state of South Carolina hadn't played fair with him for 30 years, had planted evidence, there was evidence of perjured testimony, and he just couldn't take a chance that he'd get a fair trial the next time around. That's why I call it anatomy of injustice.
Were you there with him when he was released?
Yes.
What was that day
well,
like?
Well, it was very emotional. It was as Diana said, Diana Holt said, it was bittersweet. On the one hand, for him to walk out of prison after 30 years was a wonderful feeling. But to have had to have pled guilty to a crime he didn't commit in order to walk out of prison, that left a very uncomfortable taste in a lot of mouths.
Do you think that the same case could happen today?
Of course.
That racism like that still exists?
It's not just racism, Emily. It's more the prosecutorial misconduct. It doesn't have to be racism. It has to do with police in a hurry to solve a crime, a prosecutor willing to do whatever it takes to get a conviction, and horrible defense lawyers. But I think the most troubling is the state, the police, and the prosecutor. And you hear about it all the time. And that's more troubling than the racial issue.
I've been speaking to Ray Bonner, author of Anatomy of Injustice. You can find a full version of our interview on our website, annenbergradio.org. Now we check in with Kendall Fisher to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Kendall.
Thank you so much, Emily. We will give you the latest on the 7.6 earthquake that hit Mexico today. Also, find out about USC's new plans for gender-neutral housing. Finally, LA jumped 20 spots in the rankings for bedbugs. Find out just how bad it is tonight at 6 on ATVN.
That's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Anna Catherine Bajita, Evan Budrovich, and John Diebold. Aaron Schrank is our producer. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Emily Frost.